Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Show coming back from holiday, coming back from relaxation, coming back to the airwaves and online. I've got a couple of things to say in this first hour. In fact, quite a number of things to say. And if you'd like to welcome me back or whatever, the caller lines are open. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, it's been a good 3 weeks since the last broadcast. 2012 was a huge year for me, and I'm sure it was a huge year for many. So much went on, so much has been achieved, and as a result, you get burnt out by the very end of the year. You know, about 21st December 2012, everybody ringing me, oh, end of the year or whatever. For me, it was always a psyop. And sure enough, it was. Back in the day, prophets used to be held accountable. If their prophecy did not come true, bang, dead. They got killed. Maybe we should bring some of that back. No, I'm kidding. It would be pretty funny, though. Oh, love and light with the 2012, bang. Go away. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? I don't have to deal with that stuff anymore. The other concept I wanted to lay on to people and really kind of fix into now is not just the fact that when a year's over, nothing really changes. It just keeps going round in a circle, much like a Mayan calendar. It's actually work, you know, jobs, that kind of thing. I had this Facebook status, get a job equals be a slave. And a lot of people didn't really know what I meant by that. And I kind of wanted to explain it, is that when you are told, as I have many, many times, to go get a job and to stop doing what I'm doing, the translation of what these people are actually saying to me is, be a slave like me. Otherwise, you're not worth anything. You know, that's basically it. That's all I meant by that. And I was also upset one of my listeners who thought that because he had a job and was feeding his family that I was calling him a slave. It's like, oh, hold on. I'm a slave too, okay? And he was like, oh, how can you say that, Vinny? Well, here's why. I don't have a choice, okay? I don't have a choice. If I didn't want to pay tax, I would either, I don't know, have a real problem dealing with anything. Okay. So, for example, if I wanted to say stop paying tax, and I know many people who have, and all of them are broke and under harassment constantly by authorities. Okay. And I have people telling me, Vinny, you know, you should do that. You should be broke and be under constant harassment by not paying tax and doing things in a proper way. I don't think that's a good idea. And the fact that I don't even have a choice in the matter, okay, like those are my two choices. Pay a significant portion of your income to scumbags who don't even explain or even give you an option, or live life in perpetual poverty under constant harassment. Those are my choices. I'm a slave. I realize this. The difference between me and a lot of people is that I, in fact, realize what slavery truly is. Okay? A lot of people don't understand that. And just because I'm saying get a job equals be a slave doesn't mean I don't work. Okay? I do like 10, 14-hour days most of the time, 5-6 days a week. I really, really do bust my ass. And every single job I have ever had in my entire life has been much the same. I've always been the one to show up first, leave last. So when I say get a job equals be a slave, it really means something. Because I'm talking about somebody who was a primo slave, somebody who was a primo salesman and was capable of generating revenue just whoosh, straight out of nowhere. I can't do that anymore. The real problem that I have with employment in general is not having a choice. Okay? Can you go and do that over there? Well, I don't have a choice, do I? Why did you ask me, can I? Why did you even say please? Why don't you just force me? Because really, I don't have a choice if I'm employed, do I? That's what being a slave is really about. And I think we'd all best recognize what we really are, despite the fact that we're currently slaves and working in some kind of slave job or informant. I mean, even doing the show, I still count as a form of slavery / employment. It's different in that I have many employers. You, the listeners, you who contribute and donate to the show, who suggest guests, I consider to be my employers. But your employers that I can disobey if I wish to. And that you can't fire me. I'll do what I feel is right and work as hard as I can, as I normally do. And if anybody's got a problem with that, tell me about it, please. And I'll see what I can do. It doesn't mean that I'm free. It doesn't mean that my car doesn't break down every other day. A lot of people don't want to be slaves anymore, and I accept the fact that's really a noble cause, to end human slavery, to stop paying unapportioned taxes, to stop having to work for somebody who you don't like, doing something that you don't like, listening to people who you don't respect, and working for people who don't respect you. Kind of stuff is really horrific. So if getting a job equals slavery, then conversely creating your own income equals freedom. That's what we all really want, isn't it? We want freedom. We want our time. We want our money. And we want our lives back. That's all we really want at the end of the day. We don't want to control everybody else. We don't want to tell everybody else what to do because we don't want people telling us what to do. We don't want people controlling us. As far as I'm concerned, I just want to be my own master. I want to be able to live my life and do anything I want, so long as I hurt nobody, damage and steal anybody's property. Nobody should be able to tell me or compel me to do anything. That's my perspective on that. And it's a really important realization that I had just a couple of days ago. And I thought it was worth sharing with you all, because you listeners are the very reason why I am free in any way. Really, you can't be free just on your own. Everybody has to be free. Or nobody is. You understand? I had this really horrific experience. It's called family over the holidays. Now, I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this show, and this is the realization that hit me, have trouble with their family. You know, they might not listen to you. As with my sisters, and I couldn't even get more than two sentences into a talk of anything. Of anything. Without being diverted and being told that I'm not worth listening to. And the inherent frustration of that my own family doesn't think that anything that I have to say is relevant or real or of consequence, when I believe that everything that I do is specifically driven towards that particular goal. I don't want to live a life of little consequence. I don't want to discuss things that are of little importance. I want to change the world. I want to make it a better place. I want to help people. I want to make things happen that have not happened before. Or maybe they have, and maybe it's time to bring them back. Freedom, you know. And this was what happened. I got so angry because I was not able to speak my mind or be expressed or be listened to that I stormed out of the house. It was on my birthday of all times. This was when usually the worst time of the year for me, on the 29th of December every year. Do you know what everybody's doing on the 29th of December? The answer is they're not at Vinny's birthday party because they're always off on holiday or something. And nobody ever turns up to my birthday parties, ever. Okay, even my 21st birthday party, you know, supposedly the most important birthday party of your life. I had a couple of workmates turn up. That was it. You know, not even people that I particularly liked. And I got so angry with my sister and just walked away and up the road and sat down, rolled a cigarette, and I've stopped smoking now. Last 6 days, piece of cake, nothing problem. Don't need a fracking quit line. Just didn't want to smoke anymore. And I was thinking to myself, I wanted to scream out loud. I wanted to rage at the sky. I wanted to yell so loud and so strong that all the pain and frustration and anger within me would get expelled. Then I realized that I was surrounded by houses. All these people around me who have no idea who I am would suddenly hear the screaming and this horrific banshee call in the middle of nowhere and freak them out. So I said to myself, oh, I can't do that. Not to total strangers. So I've got to try something else. How do I deal with this frustration of not being listened to by my own family? Closed my eyes, thought about it for a second. My sister's opinion doesn't matter. She doesn't know about anything that I know. No idea about 9/11. No idea about chemtrails. No idea about corruption. The three most common words, that she was saying during the time when I was up there is my three most hated words. I don't care. I don't care. She really doesn't care about anybody else but herself. Cruel, shallow, disgusting. Everything that I hate. And then this wave of Zen came over me. She doesn't matter. She's wrong. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm right. I'm clued up. I have some idea of what's going on. My opinion matters. I just realized who I was. I'm Vinnie Eastwood. I expose copious quantities of scumbaggery. I've ambushed the Prime Sinister. I've spoken to some of the greatest thinkers and philosophers and activists of our time. I live a life of great meaning and consequence. That made me feel really good. Just to know that even though I love my sister and all of that kind of stuff, everything she says and everything she thinks is irrelevant and doesn't matter by comparison to the knowledge that I possess and the things that I do on a daily basis to make the world a better place, which she never does. We'd all best be cognizant of this. When I went back the very next day, as normally happens, I was being ganged up on in an argument. And that same wave of Zen fell over me. And this massive grin plastered itself upon my face. And every single thing that these three people who were arguing with me said, I came up with a relevant fact and debunked what they said. And in about 15 to 20 minutes of this conversation going round and round and round, them shooting and missing, shooting and missing. They gave up, and I won the conversation. And it wasn't about winning. It was simply about being correct. I was correct. They were wrong. And the fact that they were wrong and did not respect my opinion didn't frustrate me, because I had a massive grin on my face. And that's how we should all really treat our family. And fools who don't know what they're talking about. And don't be frustrated. Not at all. You'll just wind up getting yourself really angry. And alienating yourself from them. It's not worth it. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Desert me.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time.
It's business time, ladies and gentlemen, right here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, 5 days a week. And, what was I going to talk about next? Oh, yes, holidays. Mate, aren't holidays great? As soon as a holiday is on its way, it's never close enough. And as soon as a holiday finishes, it's never been long enough. You know what I'm saying? Unless, of course, you're taking a holiday because you're tired, just physically exhausted, as I was, and you just need to recharge the batteries. But it doesn't mean I don't love what I do. It means that you've got to take a break from time to time. And so many people in this movement forget that. Forget that they're human, that they require time out, relaxation. need to be taken to a restaurant and shouted a nice meal or a drink of some description once in a while. Taking it easy. Just because we're trying to save the world doesn't mean that we should take responsibility for it. All right? And by that I mean taking responsibility for the whole world's problems. So I took it upon myself to go 3 weeks without email, without text messages, without Facebook, without Skype, without any communication with the outside world. I wasn't going to read any articles. I wasn't going to watch any documentaries. I'd done more than enough as far as I was concerned in 2012. And the world will still be there when I get back 3 weeks later. And here I am, and the world's still here. It hasn't ended because I decided to take some time off. So many people got to recognize and actually be really, really attentive of that fact. If you burn out, you're not going to be any help to anybody. And if you're exhausted, you're not going to really be able to help yourself. How many people kill themselves with stress and frustration because they just don't realize taking time off is a necessary part of work? And just because we're trying to save humanity doesn't mean that everybody should suddenly pay attention to us and make our lives better because we're trying to save them. No, no, it doesn't work that way. If you can't take care of yourself, how on earth are you going to take care or protect or defend anybody else? Doesn't work that way. If I was to perhaps try to go an entire year without taking a day off, I would go insane. In fact, most likely, I would become a lot stronger before going insane and accomplish a lot more work. But I would also damage myself. And when I came to the end of 2012, I was so thankful to be able to go on holiday. And I asked for a slew of donations, and I got them. I got enough donations so that I could just take a couple of weeks off without worrying about money. I wasn't going out and going on spending sprees or anything. I was doing very little comparatively. And it's so interesting how much money you need in order to do nothing. Isn't that sad? Isn't that suckful? You know? That you've got to be basically wealthy in order to do nothing in a lot of ways, just to keep the rent paid and all these bills and everything that accumulate when you're not even using them. I thought that was really irritating, and I was so grateful. Like I think I came back after 2 weeks home, and me and my girlfriend Sarah, we spent a week here basically watching movies together and just hanging out and cooking each other tea and that kind of thing. It was so blissful. And I looked in my account one day to notice that because I'm getting subscribers and things that donate on an automatic regular basis, that although I was taking time off and I wasn't doing my radio show or doing anything, I was still accumulating. And I just burst into tears. Just so grateful, you know, to actually know that people care, that people want to support me and what I'm doing. I was just so grateful. I don't think anybody else realizes what it's like to be me, and nor should you. Everybody helps me so much. People listen to me with such intensity. So humbling is the experience that it makes me feel obligated to do more. Much more. like I have not earned what I'm getting already. I still don't feel that I've done enough. And I don't know what enough even means. Trying to accomplish things and not knowing exactly what I'm really trying to accomplish. I want to be free, sure. How do I quantify that? Will Monsanto be disbanded? Will the US government become restricted back and be reduced into virtually nothing before people can really be free? Is that the end goal here? Maybe. But I don't think that I'll ever see it. I don't know if I'll ever be able to live in a world where I really will be free. I wish that I could. And I have faith that such a world can exist. I just don't know if I'll be alive to see it. I wish that I could be. And something I wanted to share with everybody is that it's my goal and that's what I'm doing. And without the generous support of listeners and donations, literally it wouldn't be possible to even speak right now. And I can't work again. I literally can't. I get panic attacks if I go into a job interview because I just can't follow orders anymore. I want to do what's right. I want to do things that are creative. And to be told that I can't is a reality that I'm just simply ill-equipped to deal with anymore. I used to be capable of putting up anything, follow any order, yes boss, you know, with a big smile on my face, go off and do whatever they wanted me to do. Can't do that anymore. And as I was speaking before about the family, that frustration and that anger and that rage that I felt, it occurs to me that probably the vast majority of the listeners to this show and many others don't experience that frustration only for a couple of days a year. It's constant. Constantly not being listened to. Being called a conspiracy theory. Being ridiculed, belittled, mocked by the people who are supposed to love you and support you. I hadn't felt that way in so long. I'd forgotten what it was like. And I realized what it's like for all of you. Some of you are conspiracy theorists and are married to people who love being slaves. Who every day you see them doing stupid things and talking about irrelevant nonsense. Have nothing that matters. Was horrible. It was so horrible. I couldn't bear to live like that. I live with my girlfriend Sarah, and she's a truther. We never have such problems in our household. And my heart goes out to all of you who live in that situation right now. You know, I don't know what I can do for you. I was lucky enough to be able to just go there, experience it, and then come back. For many of you, there is no escape. You're stuck at home with your family, or you're stuck in your relationship with your wife or husband who just doesn't get it. I don't know what to say. I don't know what I can do to make things better for you other than plaster that big cheesy grin on your face, know that they don't have a clue what they're talking about and all of their opinions and speculations are completely and utterly irrelevant because you are correct. You have the facts and you should be supremely confident that at least you are not the one who is crazy and stupid enough to believe that everything in the world is just fine. And the people who are saying that things are wrong crazy ones. We have a caller here. One of my good mates, friend of a friend. I think it's Colston. Are you on the air?
Vinny, my buddy. How are you, my friend? My fellow compatriot. Oh, man. You're getting me right at the heart there, buddy. Getting me right at the heart. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, you know, you push yourself a little too hard, and you got to take a step back once in a while, and I understand what that's all about. I really do. And how do we get through this? Well, yeah, we can't dwell on the negative all the time. We've got to be positive in other parts of our life, you know? But I appreciate, you know, all of your shows, and with the levity and the enthusiasm and hard work that you put into your shows. And I just want to call in there and say I'm here for you, buddy. And how can we get beyond this? You know, we all have to stick together. And, you know, like that Stone song, we all need someone to lean on. And, you know, if we just pay it forward to our brothers and sisters, and as far as the establishment and the NWO, hello?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and the NWO, we just need to expose them, that's all, and come together and have referendum and popular vote and some major legal action and expose these people. So that's all we can do.
You know how the government talks about the troops that go overseas and they give the ultimate sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking we're troops at home and the same ultimate sacrifice is due from us. I think we've lived so long and had so easy that now it's our time to pay. And what happened with my sister, Colston, is that I got what I wanted out of that situation. I went into holidays feeling exhausted from working really hard over the year, but also feeling frustrated, like I didn't care anymore, like frack the truth was something that was going through my mind, and I was wondering, why is that? And I was talking to my friend Will last night, and he said, well, let me offer a suggestion. Is it because that you've stagnated and you're not where you really want to be, and that's why you're starting to kind of just go, well, frack everything, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is that before those thoughts started to occur to me, something else occurred to me. I hadn't felt frustration, discrimination, or pain, or true rage for so long that I'd forgotten what it felt like. I hadn't had a life-changing experience in a while either. And I wanted some pain. I wanted some frustration so that I could grow stronger from it. And I got precisely what I wanted. And everybody needs to recognize that unless you suffer, unless you experience pain and frustration, you do not grow.
That's true.
You do not evolve. Colston, thank you very much for your call, bro.
Hey, have a good night, man.
Bye. You too, man. Thanks so much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. The call lines are open, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, you lose that sense of humor, you'll go freaking nuts. Be right back.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the first hour. Caller lines are open, 218-339-8525. What it means to be someone who is elected to serve humanity rather than the state or a corporation. You ever work for somebody and they tell you, just think about it for a second. Is what I'm doing right for the company? Likewise, a politician. Just think about it. What am I doing that is good for the country? Well, like JFK said, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And I've been thinking about this rather intensely over the last few days. What am I doing? Is there really any point? And ultimately there is, and it didn't occur to me until last night having a conversation with my friend Will exactly what my role and function is. I don't actually care about a lot of the outcomes to the things we talk about on this show. All right? Let me qualify that. Doesn't mean I don't care about people. Doesn't mean I don't care about the issues. Here's the point. Let's say I'm against the war in Iraq. Can I stop the war in Iraq from happening by myself? No. Let's say I don't like the way Monsanto is taking people's farms off them. Can I stop that from happening by myself? No. I've attended countless protests, spoken to countless people who all have these things that they don't want to happen, yet they happen anyway. So what is my role then? It's not to stop these things from happening. That's not possible. I simply want to know what is happening. And that is actually the function of the media. They don't care what you're talking about or what happens after the conversation. They really don't. They simply want to talk to you, to listen, to find out what's actually going on, so they can inform other people of it. What other people do with that information is totally up to them. And Will said to me, you know, well, what impact or influence do you think you're even having, Vinny? And I said, well, incidentally, yesterday I had not less than three people contact me who were starting their own radio shows, who were inspired by me to do so, who are asking me for help, advice, pointers, which I was only too happy to give. He's like, well, that's some results there. And I go, I know. People need an example to follow, don't they? We have this leader complex, this mentality that there's going to be some great benevolent dude who will suss out and solve all our fracking problems. I don't think so. Only you can solve your own problems. But if you do see others who have solved theirs, it gives you inspiration and the ability to solve your own via example. It's just that simple. Oh, he can do it, so can I. But it's a personal choice thing. Like the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, can't make it drink. Or alternatively, you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make it think. I had the quite poignant recognition of the facts of the matter, of what my limitations are, what my role really is. And how many people that I actually get to speak to and help on a daily basis. I've been given so many times people have told me that listening to the show is what gets them through the day. That's really,
a lot of responsibility. And the more people I help, I believe the greater my responsibility becomes. That's why I stopped smoking. That's why I'm doing weights and playing hacky sack every day now. I want my head clear. I want my body strong. I need physically the power and the strength to do anything I choose to see, you know? I think we mostly abdicate those responsibilities to ourselves. You know, we're all sitting around just going, oh, that tastes good, I'll eat that, and that's a cool movie, I'll go watch that. And before we know it, we're sitting on our asses 99% of the time and eating crap the other 1% of the time. You know, like literally, we eat crap every day. And the taste and the stink of my own mouth and flesh was starting to disgust me. When I looked in the mirror, I felt sick at what I saw. I'd gained so much weight and I'd lost control of a lot of my emotions. I was getting angry all the time. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be unhealthy. I don't want to be poor. And I take my New Year's resolutions very, very seriously. Most people don't even do them anymore because they realize that I'm a weak person and I can't be bothered. You know, people have got a crisis of faith in themselves. Really. That's what it comes down to. That's what all these Anthony Robbins and personal power type people are always telling people, that humanity is going through a crisis of faith. Not faith in God, not faith in government, but faith in themselves. If you believe that you are capable, then you are capable. If you believe that no matter how hard you try, it's impossible, then it's definitely, definitely impossible. Never under any circumstances will I accept that anything is truly impossible. It might not be easy, may be difficult, and who knows, I may never accomplish all these things that I want to do in life. But it won't stop me from at least trying and persevering. Everyone has that frustration. You know, some people around you, you know, for me, quitting smoking is just, and I've quit. Don't really want those ciggies no more. And the landlady that's just down the block from me was delivering her some rubbish bags yesterday. And I told her that I'd quit, and it was just instant, you know. And she'd been smoking for 50 years. 50 years. And as soon as I talked about willpower and how easy it was, her head sunk down and started looking at her shoes. She didn't have any faith in herself. She thinks that this little rolled piece of paper and cotton filter and dried tobacco with 700 chemicals is more powerful than she, a sentient being. How horrific is that? So many people live like that, slaves to their addictions, miserable with themselves, and simply try to feed their addictions in order to abate the misery. No. Never again. In 2012, I made a New Year's resolution. Well, I was sitting in a car at 4 o'clock in the morning outside a dance club, listening to talk radio, because I couldn't be bothered being in the dance club no more. 2012. Time to stop fracking around. I now have enough income from supporters and subscribers so that all my bills are paid, and even some of my girlfriend's bills. You know how every time you've got a little bit of spare money and suddenly some fracking bill comes in that takes all that spare money away? Every time. God. I suddenly found myself having the resources to cope with that stuff. Every time I needed something, my listeners are there for me. Unbelievable. Man, that's awesome. And now, I've got 5,000 YouTube subscribers, huge quantities of radio content and video content all over the web now, being contacted by great people on a daily basis who actually now need my help. And I feel obligated to help them because I'm in a privileged position. Those who are in a position of privilege must do something to help those that are in a less fortunate position. That's the nature of obligation. That's the nature of power. Any form of power needs to be given to others. If you simply sit there and try to accumulate it for yourself, for all the grand prospects, like, oh, I'm so wonderful, I'm so awesome, you're going to wind up a corrupt, selfish scumbag. Happens every time. My father was one of those people. And I have that same streak that he had of malice, cruelty, looking down on other people as if I'm better. I had to stop myself. The other day I was driving around and every single person that I saw was like, oh, they're shorter than me. Oh, they're uglier than me. Oh, they look like a loser. Or they look like them. And I was just like, whoa, hold on. Why am I doing that? I shouldn't be doing that. Is there anybody who I actually think positively about that makes me feel better? I thought of my missus. Thought of Sarah. I felt a hell of a lot better. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
To hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening and intellectual pleasure. My very special guest is, Melon Benedict from Melon-Thomas.com. And what we were talking about before the show was just about who he is and what he does, you know, that kind of thing. And what occurred to me is this guy is an inventor. He's who Deepak Chopra calls the encyclopedia of the afterlife. He is somebody who's a practical person, okay? He invents stuff and that kind of thing. And through science, you're actually able to measure these things that previously had been subject just to the realm of belief. And indeed, his belief was once that humanity is like a cancer on the planet. And incidentally, your thoughts manifest. And he did get cancer. He didn't even know what hospice was until he was in one. And his perspective on the world was radically changed after his near-death experience as a result. And he became a full-time researcher after this experience. He's studied longevity. He likes to give a presentation called Who Lives to 100 and Why? How longevity and science really can go hand in hand. And also, another interesting element that we talked about, which I mentioned in the first hour, was how prophets back in the day, who made predictions that didn't pan out, got killed. And how interesting it would be if we still held prophets to account like that today. How many people spent so much time convincing people that 2012 was going to be the end of humanity, or there was going to be some kind of consciousness shift or whatever. Nothing happens and they experience no consequence. How interesting. So his website is Melon-Thomas.com. That's MELLEN-THOMAS.com.
He's a man about the afterlife and near this experience. So we're going to talk to him today. Melon, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Benny. It's fun to be on the air with you.
Yeah, most people say that. So, where would you like to lead off?
Well, I don't know, really. This is a new audience to me, but basically, one of the greatest lessons that I've ever learned from my experience, I'm someone who had a very negative attitude about everything and about the whole world, and I'm not here to pump everybody up, but I can tell you that I was an agnostic that had a near-death experience. And I didn't, I wasn't even an atheist, because an atheist at least argue with you about the subject. I didn't even show that much interest. But I can tell you that I did survive dying. It was a well-documented case, an hour and a half without vital signs. And that by no means is any record in the annals of medical records of people without vital signs. It's interesting. There have been so many people that have had no vital signs for over 50 minutes to days and have come back to consciousness without any brain damage at all. This is a very interesting scenario. But I can tell you this, how it affected me was that I was very, very surprised to see that there is another dimension to this life, another realm to this life that's very real, and I believe based in quantum physics. And when I had my experience with what people call the light, which I consider sort of the mother frame matrix of collective consciousness on planet Earth, to put it that way, you know, a little more scientifically. I wasn't led to believe in deities or some white god in the sky on a throne. But I did discover that there is something super important going on here, and it has a spirit. It's called the spirit of life. And the collective consciousness of the entire planet, everything on it and every human being to this point has added up to an amazing point in history. And so I believe now, I don't even want to call it a spiritual experience, but I have a belief in that there is a real spirit here, a spirit of life of which we're all a part of. And this is explained scientifically through what's called the Gaia concept, or they may say Gaia in England. It was actually discovered by James Lovelock, an Englishman, who, after many, many years of studying, he's one of the great inventors and scientists of our time, many years of studying planet Earth, he saw and scientifically measured that Earth was self-regulating, self-modulating, and seemed to act very, very intelligently. And then that corresponded about the same time that, you know, the first astronauts on their way to the moon took the first picture of the whole Earth, you know, that famous picture. It was the first time the picture of the whole Earth had been taken by a human, and the astronauts were all profoundly changed, because when they looked at this Earth, it looked alive, and they didn't see borders, they didn't see races of people, they didn't see political parties. They saw one living planet, and that's the greatest lesson that I've learned, is something I call the Gaia perspective, is looking at this entire living system as a whole system. In other words, humans are a part of the system. We are not the sum total of it. We're not even the rulers of it. The real rulers of this Earth are the microbes. You know, just for an example, over 90% of life on Earth is microbial. And in your body, in the human body, you have trillions of cells. Well, over 90% of those cells are microbes. And they evolved from the beginning of time to be here now with you. And they have incorporated into our lives. They control our hormones, brain functions. We could not be conscious without them. So we have sort of a, what I call a human chauvinism about what intelligence is and what life is, really. And so we're having, like, since the 1990s, we've been in a golden age of science. And we're having this, I call it almost like Galileo experience, because before Galileo, everyone thought the entire universe, you know, evolved around the Earth. The Earth was a center of everything. And we found out that's not true. Well, mankind is about to find that out. We are not the center of anything. And it's very important to cherish what we have collectively over time built on this planet in cooperation with this planet. So it's very, very important to cherish what we have been able to manage to come out. Imagine the calcium in your bones, the iron in your blood, all came from stars that died billions of years ago. So in one way, imagine a stone coming into consciousness. We're like a rock that became conscious. The minerals in our body, all that came from stars. And so this
In my opinion, there's a lot of people who don't have much more intelligence than a rock that are conscious.
Granted, you know, I have a philosophy, and that is treat everyone as if they're super intelligent until proven otherwise.
Yeah, unfortunately, I see so much proof. Now, you're talking about the Earth as an organism and agnosticism and this kind of thing. And something occurred to me about my concept of God, just personally for a second here. It's a macro organism. Right. There was this dude who invented this microscope, I think, in the early 1900s, who was able to get 60,000 times magnification. Normal electrostatic microscopes, 10,000. He was able to look at a cell and go, okay, well, look, it's an independent organism. It's walking around. It's doing all these things. It's got its own kind of little thing, and it's working in harmony with all the other cells around it. So he looked inside that cell, and then within it, there was all these other little cells that were far, far smaller, but they all were working in harmony and making up that one larger cell. And then he looked inside those even smaller cells and found that they were made up of even smaller cells that were all working around in harmony and that kind of thing. And then he looked inside those and so on and so forth. It's, in my opinion, life is infinite, up the scale, down the scale, right? So I'm a subjective organism called Vinny Eastwood. Within my body, there's 5 trillion cells. Each one and every one of those cells has their own consciousness and their own this, that, and the other. And to them, the cells in my body, I'm God. But to me, I'm a cell in, say, the planet, and let's say the planet and all our collective unconscious and all of the different organisms working in harmony and that kind of thing in a survival mode, that's God. Would you agree? Some kind of late psionic energy that's in between all these organisms everywhere creates one overall organism, and then the planet itself is part of a much larger organism called the galaxy or whatever?
Yeah, that's basically the Gaia concept. You can look at the whole Earth, our solar system, then you can look at our galaxy, and there must be at least 6 billion more planets like Earth in this galaxy by conservative estimates. And then you look, this galaxy is a form of a cluster of galaxies, and it is this incredible galactic universal organism that we are a minuscule part of. And okay. And that, you know, you can label that anything you want. I choose not to use the word God, because that has sort of a religious overtone and separates people, because then you know, which God are we talking about now?
Yeah. And that's another thing, is that we had a conversation before the show, and the fathers of science, you know, Newton and all of them, actually really deeply religious people. Yet, what science has been misconstrued for has been to replace any concept of spirituality or higher consciousness or something like that by trying to prove that it doesn't exist. I found that the dumbest people I found are the most highly educated. You've ever found that?
Well, it seems to be more and more so that way.
How do you reconcile that one? And I wanted to ask you as well, would you be able to describe your life and death experience for the audience? You know, you were dead for an hour and a half. What did you see?
Okay, and this is back before the near-death thing was very popular, and, you know, it's all kind of cut and paste now. But I was someone that was fairly clueless. I wasn't interested in any of this work. I'd never met a person that had a near-death or anything like that. I'd never even heard of hospice before I ended up in one. So fairly clueless stumbling into this. And I really believed that when you died, the light went out, and that was it. And that's what I believed. And so I did succumb to my disease. I was diagnosed with terminal brain disease in 81, given 6 to 8 months to live. It was incurable, inoperable at the time. And I'm one of those people who decided to do nothing, because the aggressive chemo and radiation and even surgery would have left me a vegetable before I died. At least I had a doctor that was honest enough to tell me that. And his advice to me was, go home and make your peace. Well, that wasn't much comfort. But I did. I did not go in for any treatments at all, and did succumb to my disease. And for me, it happened this way. I remember waking up one morning around sunrise, and I had a feeling that I was either going to die today or very, very soon. And it's the same feeling I've heard soldiers talk about before battle. I've heard mothers talk about. There's a feeling that comes, and it's actually quite a clear feeling. There was no fear in it. It was quite clear. And I had a reckoning. And then I went back to sleep. And the next thing I know is I was standing outside of my body, looking at my body on the bed. And I was very confused because it was super real. It wasn't like a dream at all. And then what happened is what they now call a life review began. And this was like snippets of my life from the moment of my death ticking all the way backwards. And I got to see snippets of my life that helped, in a way, were very sad because I realized I had wasted my life. I'm someone who was raised from a fairly average dysfunctional family, and my family had no love skills at all. They weren't bad people. We just didn't know how to love each other, show love, or even receive it. So I was someone who had lived my life with no love skills and no receptors to feel love, so to speak. You know what I mean? I used to say that love was a mental illness and exhibited all the symptoms of mental illness. Skeptic. And I got to see that how many people had actually really loved me, tried to love me and give me love, show me love, but I had no receptors to receive it. I couldn't even see it. And that made me very, very sad. Incredibly sad. And so for all of you out there that may think no one loves you or there's no love out there, it's just that you aren't seeing it. You aren't able to receive it as I was. And that made me very, very sad. And I was watching all these snippets and little things, big things, and it ticked all the way back in my life. I was at a point where I was in my mother's womb and had memories. And later, after my near-death experience, later I was able to discuss this with my mother. And there were things she had never told me. She said, "You don't know that. You weren't even born. I've never even told you about that." And one incident was my biological father at the time was an alcoholic. And a bad one when he got drunk, and he beat my mother quite a bit, and especially when she was pregnant. And I remember being conscious inside her, feeling her getting beaten, and I was connected to her nervous system. I was connected to her hormones. I could feel her fear that she thought she was going to die, that this was going to be it this time, and I felt all of that, and modern science has now proven that fetuses from very early on in their development are really quite sensitive to light, sound, vibrations, and noises. And in that beating of my mother, which he did many times while she was carrying me, in that beating, I developed my worldview before I was ever born. My worldview, and it wasn't like intelligence, it wasn't like an intellectual kind of understanding, it was more of a sensing. You know, a raw, like when someone's yelling at you, you sense that something's not right, you know. And my worldview was set before I was born. My worldview was that wherever I was a really bad place. It was painful. And this voice, which was a male voice, was the most horrible thing in the world. And I carried a chip on my shoulder to the day I died. I never trusted men. I never had a best male friend. I had female friends. I was also a big kid. I was tall and I was a football type guy, but I was someone who could not stand, I could not tolerate someone bullying someone else. So I had all these chips on my shoulder. And when I was in school, I was a bully beater. And so hold on a second.
Melon, we'll close off on the bully beater type thing because we're coming to break now. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue along this same strain. Melon Benedict from melon-thomas.com. Back in a tick.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, trying to bring you the lighter side of genocide. Just some fun every single day because, well, I think personally that there's a lot of real nasty things out there, and when people are reading out the news every day, it's 99% bad news. Where's the fun in that? There's a heck of a lot of cool people out there who've had amazing experiences. And you know what, Millen? I think you're one of those people. And I've been thinking about this the last couple of days. Knowing what's happening today and all the bad things and everything is irrelevant. I think if you haven't heard something before and you learn something of value, that's news. What do you reckon?
True. Yeah, you know, I've been a full-time researcher since my near-death experience, because my experience with the light, and it was an intelligence. I looked at it as the sum total intelligence of the entire planet I was speaking to. Encouraged me to because I asked a lot. I spent a lot of time asking questions. It's a well-documented case. I asked a lot of questions, and I was very scientifically oriented. I asked a lot of questions, and one of the first questions I had to ask this light that people meet is, well, why humanity? I mean, why even bother? Humans seem so dark and doomed and evil, and they just kill each other all the time. What's the point, you know? And what was interesting is that the light showed me all the goodness in the world. And I've been researching that ever since. What the light showed me was this: some very simple things. The light showed me, so you think this is evil, let me show you something. And the light showed me what looked like a monster. And the light said, this monster has killed more humans and animals and caused more pain than all the wars of mankind put together to this day. And it was absolutely true. And then it was like the light reduced this monster. It was like I had been looking at it under an electron microscope. When the light reduced it, it was a mosquito. And the light then asked me, this has caused more damage, more pain, more deaths of human beings and all the wars of humanity put together. Is the mosquito evil? And then the light showed me my cancer cell. And did you know that, and I've researched everything the light has told me, did you know that most cancer cells would live forever if they didn't kill the host? The cancer cells really don't age. They have telomeres that don't go short as the cells divide. And telomeres are, you know, the latest research in anti-aging. Every time your cells divide, the little chain gets a little shorter. And at some point, you know, you age and get old. Well, cancer itself would never die unless it killed the host. And that's fascinating to understand. And then the light said something that I've been looking at ever since. And I'm a full-time researcher in what's good on planet Earth, and I don't have to look very far. But, you know, the media isn't going to show it to you because it's boring. How about a news show that said things are better than they've ever been? And that is the truth. And in my DVDs and on my website, I try to show people this from a research point of view. The homicide rate is at the lowest it's been at since homicides have been measured in civilized countries. That's since the 1200s. The homicides rates are minuscule compared to what they used to be. And secondly, my cancer cell wasn't evil, but it was killing me. And I got a whole new view of what is evil and what isn't. I got to see, the light showed me that humans, and this may blow some people's mind, that humans are the most graceful beings and animals on this planet. We are pure grace compared to everything else. We just have a very negative attitude about ourselves, mainly because of our religions, telling us we're worthy, we're no good, we're sin, we're going to go to hell, all of that. But did you know that right under your feet in the carpet, there's a war going on at the insect and microbial level. Just outside your window, there's a war going on right out in your yard. And there are no rules. It's kill or be killed. It's that way in nature from day one on planet Earth. It's kill or be killed in the microbial, animal, and insect world and plant world. Human beings have come out of all of this to have law and order, to have grace. humans kill each other and hunt and prey on each other far less than any other creature on planet Earth. And that is the truth. Now, we are beings that are coming to an end of war soon. Certainly by the next 100 years, we won't have wars on this planet at all anymore. They don't make sense. They're too expensive. And by the way, wars are always created by somebody that wants to profit from them in some way.
Well, in fact, this reminds me of a conversation I was having yesterday. You know, the libertarian non-aggression principle, you know, you can't initiate force against somebody else. You know, you can't kill them, hurt them, or steal their stuff, right? Does that apply to every species? And it's like, well, no. No, it doesn't. Sharks eat the fish. Lions eat the zebras. It's law of the jungle, right? That's natural law. So how do humans govern that type thing? And it's like, well, we've got the capacity of farming. We have the ability to treat animals really, really nicely and kill them really humanely and eat them and sustain ourselves. Okay? We don't have to be animalistic about it. We can be quite nice and try and be nice to each other. What's the moral complex here? You know? I wondered about this very much. And I think it's like, when I see any problem with humanity or anything that we're doing that's bad, usually it's the result of a very small, determined bunch of people who are usually psychopathic or sociopathic. Their brains just ain't firing properly. And they do horrible things to other people because they haven't really tapped into their higher consciousness. They're still on that law of the jungle level, and they don't realize how great and how grand they are.
It's true. You know, I've traveled to so many countries since my near-death experience, and I can tell you that if it was legal to kill you and it was, quote, karma-free to kill you, most people on Earth would never hurt you. And until you start starving them, bombing them, and torturing them. But, you know, how many stories have you seen where a total stranger will give an organ to somebody to help them live, give a kidney, you know, give part of their liver? It's pretty incredible. And humans come up with some very interesting concepts that don't exist at any other level on this planet. One is retirement. What a concept. We're the only ones that have any chance of retirement in the whole kingdom. So these are graceful concepts.
I was just wondering this, you know, you ever get that point where you're frustrated? It's like, why can't stuff be easy? Why can't, you know, why can't I just be happy? Or why do all these bills have to come in at the same time? And it's like, well, dude, are you still alive? Yeah. Well, then you're going to wind up being frustrated or perplexed or in danger of something. That's what life is about.
I heard a very good joke not long ago, and a man was telling me, he said, why is Earth the most favorite place for souls to reincarnate? And I said, why? And he said, this is where you come when you need a vacation from eternal bliss. So don't expect it here. You can always have eternal bliss.
Yeah, I think my girlfriend's father told me one time, he's a big Bible fanatic himself, says that this is Satan's dominion, this planet, and eternal suffering and everything is just your lot in life, really. You know, it's just like, well, great. That's comforting.
Very comforting. You know, humans, our life has improved, generally speaking, over the whole world to a point that's unimaginable. Did you know that technically, and this is definitely check me out on anything I say because I'm a researcher. Technically, and the key word is technically, since 1975, we have been at a point on Earth where we can feed, clothe, comfort, educate every human on planet Earth without destroying the planet. It's never happened before in the history of the world. And this is one of the benefits of collective intelligence on the planet. And I can tell you for a fact, and the top people in the world know this. The Dalai Lama knows it. The Pope knows it. The governments know it. The car companies know it. We're coming into a time in history where there will never, ever again be as many jobs as there was once before. That time is over. And so when everybody's telling you jobs, 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 no, we need a new society. And we've come to a time in the world where communism was doomed to fail of its own weight, and the kind of capitalism, especially the kind of capitalism Americans have known, it was doomed to come to its end in our time anyway. And you can't, what happens is it's gotten completely top heavy and they don't even care about the middle class anymore. So we're coming into, you've heard of the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, and all of those that happen periodically in human history. We're now coming into a new time in which we redefine the rights of the average human, because the future is not about work. We weren't meant to be industrial animals for our eternity. The Industrial Revolution was a small blip on the screen which set everybody free. Did you know that before 1807 and the first machines and factories, the only way you could become rich was to have a lot of slaves or serfs? In 1807, the machines started replacing slaves and created a middle class, a leisure class, and you could become rich without slaves. It set the free. You know, the do-gooders are great, and they tried, but what really freed the slaves was the Industrial Revolution. And in the end, the Industrial Revolution is what frees us. So in some of my workshops, I actually have people contemplate on the thought that what if you had a life in which survival was not an issue, rent was not an issue, what would you do with your life? And most people are stunned until they start thinking about it. I said, well, these are mental exercises you should think about, because this is definitely where the future is going. The future is quite different than the present, just as the present was quite different than the past.
So my opinion is, without pain and suffering, there's no advancement. Without challenge, there's nothing to overcome. And this is a conversation I had last night with my friend. We were both talking about how there's so many people out there who are foolish, ignorant, slave-like, slovenly, you know, lazy or intellectually dishonest, and never really accomplish anything great in their lives, and never fulfill anything of value to themselves or to really anybody else. And I was reminded of my friend Frederick and what he told me. He used to live in a place where the rich came to play, and what he noticed about these incredibly wealthy kids who had everything handed to them on a silver platter, they could barely tie their shoes. They couldn't drive a car. They couldn't even make toast. If everything is handed to you, you're worth nothing. You're just incapable. And I think it's really just through challenges and harshness that we develop some form of greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Survival.
You know? And this has been repeated throughout history. You know, I recently was on what was called the Mayan Galactic 2012 tour. And I was right down there at the pyramids during the, quote, end of the world on December 21st, right? I was right in the thick of it. I was a featured speaker. And basically, it was interesting to see how many people took it so seriously. But one of the things, if you've studied the Mayas or any culture, and the Mayas, I'll just talk about because it's the one we're all sort of interested in right now. You know, there was a time in which the Mayan royalty didn't cook, didn't do anything for themselves. It was all done by the peasants. But as they kept denuding the forest with the slash and burning, you know, the NASA space program has proven now that there was a 400-year period in which a great deal of the rainforest was down. It couldn't support anybody. That's why the culture collapsed. But there's the Mayan story is that there came a morning in which the cook didn't show up for the royal family because her family had starved to death. They weren't even thinking about the middle class or the workers. And you see this repeated all through history. And it's so the thing is, we have to be self-initiated. We have to be self-aware of where we are in history and time. And we're at a time in history now where we have more access to everything than we've ever had in the past. And it's time. Do you expect governments and the ultra-wealthy to take care of us? I don't. I expect we need to take care of ourselves. And it's true, in this world, there will always be suffering and pain. There will always be broken bones and broken hearts. But the fundamental suffering of mankind, like food and clothing and shelter, that time now we can solve all of those problems quite easily. And so it is a wonderful time.
Mm, mm, mm. And another thing that's interesting about our time is that
survival's not guaranteed, but it's pretty close to it. Like the amount of children that die in childbirth has been drastically reduced, and those who are born deformed or severely handicapped or something can still survive for long, long periods of time, whereas previously throughout history, it just wasn't even possible for them to survive. It just wasn't possible. Now, what we've got, essentially, is, I don't know, an epidemic of global mollycoddling to a degree, don't you think? People are just soft.
Yeah, I do. Especially in a country, in countries like America, where we have been on top so long and taken everything for granted. I mean, what we call stress today is trying to figure out what restaurant we're going to go to, or if I might a parking place at the grocery store. This is what we call stress. When, you know, 1,000 or 5,000 years ago, going out to dinner was a very different issue altogether. You could have just as easily become dinner.
Exactly. I mean, you go out and you try to find dinner with a spear instead of a knife and fork. We'll be right back with Mel and Thomas at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment. My very special guest is Melon Thomas Benedict from melon-thomas.com. It's M-E-L-L-E-N, not M-E-L-O-N. Speaking of which, we were talking about challenges, frustrations, you know, and this is actually something I think would be really cool. If the world would, as you say, be fed, clothed, and sheltered, and that's the stock standard, okay? You know, you're out of the wind, you're not starving to death, you got enough water, and you're not frickin' naked. If that was the baseline by which everything would come on, there's still a shockingly large amount of massive challenges beyond that. I think if people are distracted through simple survival, then they don't have time or the capacity to solve any problems that are of, you know, greater value or worth. Yeah.
Well, everybody seems
preoccupied with survival. If you take just survival in itself out of the equation, then your objective is not to survive. Your objective becomes to thrive.
I totally believe it. We've been so evolved from day one in Earth history in survival. Survival compromises you because to have a lot of integrity has been very costly. How many people can tell their boss what they think about them? How many people can, you know, be that honest? Because survival involves it's a distortion of your integrity also. And how many of us have sold our lives to work for someone else? You see what I mean? We sell our lifetimes to someone else. And I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but in our country, both parents have to work, but usually the mother's salary goes to pay a stranger to raise the child. What's that about? This time is coming to an end.
Well, shoot, I hope so. And it's the exact same here in New Zealand. And what I find interesting about Americans is that they constantly say, I don't know what's going on in New Zealand. Well, here's the point. Everything that happens in New Zealand is very Americanized. It's a lot more familiar than you'd think.
Oh, I know. Oh.
Especially television. Right, well, we have a caller who's been holding online for about 20 minutes. Should we go to them? We've only got a few minutes left in the show anyway. What do you reckon?
Sure.
Sure. Caller, in the 323 area code, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Expect that they're one of those callers that just kind of calls in, listens, and then doesn't say anything. I love that.
Okie dokie then. Never mind. Lastly, I think we want to try and cover some ground in this last segment here, Melon. What do you think is most important for people who are not in a situation like us where they have a profound awareness of the world or life after death or anything like that? What is it that stops people going down a path that has no end? Do you sort of know what I mean like that? Like they're doing something that doesn't matter and they don't realize that their life is meaningless? What has to happen to people, or what should people do in order to start giving their lives meaning?
That's that's very important for those of us that have those kind of lives. I had one of those kind of lives. And what the light has shown me is that to get to the point where we're going, which is literally to colonize other star systems, you know, we can't stay on planet Earth very long, much longer. We're the birds that must leave the nest. You know, every star, every planet has a life and a death. And this planet, it has an awareness that's beyond intelligence. Just like you know you will die someday, this planet is aware of that. And so humans are one of the children of this system who are the stargazers. We've always gazed at stars. And so it took tens of millions of us and hundreds of thousands of years to come to a point, and most of this was with what somebody would might think was a meaningless job. It turns out that everything you've ever done is of significant cosmic importance and has added up to the sum total of collective consciousness on planet Earth. All the blood, sweat, and tears that we've all put into this over many lifetimes, it will pay off. In the end, nothing has ever been lost, and everything is being gained by this. And so what we lack right now is this awareness, because our education system, and you really need to get children to understand this, our education system was basically started in England, our public school system, for the industrial model. And ignorant people were brought off the farms to learn to read and write, to operate machines, and then to become a consumer and a producer. And we're still in that age where that's really all our education system does, primarily for the average individual, is give you a way to earn a living, become a consumer and a producer. But now we're at that point in history where we don't need that many humans to do that much work anymore. And so humans were not meant to be industrial animals, and we have to always constantly reinvent ourselves. If there's one pattern that's constant throughout all of Earth history and human history, is transcendence. No matter what has been thrown at us, no matter what comet's been thrown at the planet, no matter what ice age has happened, we have come through it and have increased in our intelligence, increased in our treasure, so to speak, of value of life. So our pattern is never ruin. Our pattern has always been transcendence. And this starting to catch on all over the planet is that the awareness of we are going to start colonizing stars in the not too distant future. I mean, if you think things have changed since the 1960s, wait another 100 years, you won't even recognize it. Oh, everything that's about to come online now and in the next few years. And so when you reach a point where you can transcend time and space, you don't need to conquer people, you don't need gold and diamonds, you don't need any of that. And that's when humans go to the next level, that new creation that's been talked about. And that level is, you know, they say we're not using 90% of our brain. Well, that's for what's coming. Because we're not meant to be industrial animals. We're meant to be something even more than we can imagine. So for everyone who thinks they have a meaningless, pointless job in life, it's sort of like you feel like you're this ugly caterpillar, and you're on the tree eating every leaf, you don't know what it's about, and the caterpillar doesn't realize that at some point, and some point soon, we will metamorphosize, we will become that proverbial butterfly, a new creation, something we can't even imagine is just over the horizon for humanity.
Okay. See, my perspective is people just haven't suffered enough yet. I talked about my sister and kind of how
willing she is to just ignore everything that matters and just focus on the materialistic things and things that basically, in my opinion, are of little consequence. And she's never been arrested like I have. She's never been prosecuted and had evidence made up against her. She's never had any of these really horrific experiences that I felt like they were killing me. Like, I thought these experiences were killing me. I don't think she's had the same problems with employers that I've had, where you go in and you're brilliant at what you do, and the employer, for some reason, just doesn't like having people around that are better at the job than he is, so he gets rid of you. You know, the whole betrayal and disillusionment, I think, is really the key here. People need to be disillusioned massively in order to transcend.
I agree in so many ways. You know, the only way one paradigm ends and a new one begins is when you become totally disillusioned with the present paradigm. And we see that all around us now. People aren't happy with the churches, the families, the banks, the government. We're totally disillusioned about everything. And that's only then you can say, you know, you've suffered enough or whatever. Only when you become totally disillusioned with the system, and this has happened all through history, does the system actually change. And in this period of change is when we need to be fully active in this change. You know, I don't tell people what to believe in, but I tell you, we're in one of those times in history where whatever you believe in, now it's time to believe in it.
Mm. And ultimately, people really need to start believing in themselves, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. Well, Melon, thank you very much for coming on the show today. And I think we'll bring you on again next month or something for a good two-hour interview, because there's much to discuss.
I'd love it, and I'll have a good webcam by then, I'm sure.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Melon Benedict.
Thanks, Benny.
Thanks, man. And you can check out his website, ladies and gentlemen, at mellen-thomas.com. He has books. I believe you've also got DVDs of some description on there. And also the archives for this show will be uploaded to the homepage of the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And of course, we'll be sending those links out to Melon while we're at it. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And of course, a reminder that basically the only reason why the show exists is because of the contributions from you, the listeners, and indeed Melon's contribution here today is the result of a listener suggesting he be a guest on this program. So whoever it was that suggested him, I don't have a clue who it was, but thank you. Making a good acquaintance nonetheless. Melon, thank you very much, man. You have a lovely day.